All of these icons are at risk from climate change.
People around the world are really feeling what climate change means for them.
The opportunities are here now and we can solve this problem.
You're listening to the Climate Council podcast.
Welcome to the Climate Council podcast. I'm Alexia Boland. Queensland is currently Australia's hotspot for land clearing, accounting for between 50 to 65% of native forest loss in Australia over the past four decades and generating millions of tonnes of greenhouse gas pollution. The Climate Council's report, Climate Change and Land Clearing, Risks and Opportunities in the Sunshine State, shows that more than 1 million hectares of woody vegetation, an area more than seven times larger than the size of Queensland's capital of Brisbane, was cleared between 2012 and 2016. In May this year, the Queensland Government took a significant step forward, passing new land clearing laws that will strengthen the Sunshine State's protection of vegetation, a move that will also do good things when it comes to tackling climate change. But how does land clearing affect climate change after all? We speak to climate counsellor and climate scientist, Professor Will Steffen, to break down how clearing impacts greenhouse gas pollution levels here in Australia. Professor Will Steffen, the Climate Council has recently released a report on land clearing and climate change. Can you tell me a bit about what land clearing's involvement with emissions or greenhouse gas pollution, or carbon pollution rather, is, and how it all works? Because that is often quite confused with how emissions do come from land clearing and what that means in Australia.
Yeah, the emissions from land clearing come from the fact that carbon is stored obviously in the vegetation, in tree trunks and leaves and in living vegetation, but it's also stored in the soil. In fact, if you look at the entire land ecosystem, about two-thirds of the carbon actually resides in the soil. But that carbon is continuously interchanging with the atmosphere. Every day, plants are taking up carbon from the atmosphere as they grow, but also every day they're respiring carbon back to the atmosphere through decomposition of plant material on the forest floor, a decomposition of soil material, and also plants also emit CO2 simply through their own respiration processes. So when you add all that up, so the carbon going up into the air, carbon coming back down, in a well-functioning forest or savanna, that's about neutral. So over a long period of time, it really doesn't affect how much is in the atmosphere. But if we disturb that by clearing land and burning it and turning it into agriculture, where you have much less carbon stored in the vegetation because you remove big trees and you're only growing smaller crop plants and then harvesting them. So when you look at the global emissions every year, about 90% of the greenhouse pollution comes from fossil fuels. The other 10% comes from land clearing. And interestingly, in Australia, we're about the only wealthy OECD country where land clearing is still significant in terms of emissions. And it's mainly two states. It's mainly Queensland and New South Wales. So one of the issues we face is to reduce that, because that's going to reduce the amount of greenhouse pollution we put into the atmosphere. But another point I want to make is that there's also a false linkage between land clearing and fossil fuel emission. People say, well, let's just throw more trees and then we can still burn coal. Well, the problem is this land carbon is interchanging with the atmosphere all the time. It's a very fast process in terms of the climate system. Fossil fuels are locked away from the atmosphere. They're buried under the ground. They've been there for hundreds of millions of years. So when we burn them, we are putting new carbon, additional carbon into the atmosphere. So you can't actually offset fossil fuel emissions by land carbon. So it's a complicated issue, and it's important for Australia that we get land clearing down, we get land emissions down, but at the same time, we've got to get our fossil fuel pollution down really, really fast.
And so this report, it focused heavily on Queensland, and that was largely because the state has so much opportunity, especially with changes in legislation, but also because it was becoming one of Australia's biggest hotspots for land clearing. What can you tell me about that?
Absolutely, and you put your finger on it. I think land government policy has a big effect on land clearing, and Queensland was a good example. Back in the previous Labor government in the early 2000s, they had stricter land clearing regulations, and land clearing really went way down, and the associated greenhouse pollution went way down. But when a conservative government came in, they relaxed that land clearing legislation, and you could see quite clearly that land clearing increased relatively quickly, and 4 or 5 years later, much more CO2 was coming out of the Queensland landscapes. So now, with another change of government, the Queensland government has just passed stricter land clearing legislation, and we're going to see over the coming 3 or 4 years, I think, a reduction in clearing rates. Now, the interesting thing is when we looked at what that actually meant, not only in terms of greenhouse pollution, but in terms of farming income and viability, we didn't see a big change in the profitability of Queensland farmers. So again, it shows the innovation of people that given new restrictions, people actually work out how they can still be profitable and live with new land clearing legislation. So I think there's a really interesting narrative that's coming out of Queensland to say we can protect our land carbon and still at the same time have profitable land-based industries.
And you mentioned this earlier, but you also touched on New South Wales, a state in Australia that's also got land clearing as a pretty important issue. Is it an Australian-wide issue, or is it mostly just these two states?
It's mainly those two states because they still have the largest areas of forest that are potentially could potentially be cleared. It's been a hot issue in Tasmania for a long time as well, but that's a smaller state in terms of the total amount of forested area. Much of Australia, 80% of it, is actually semi-arid or arid, so it's covered with a mix of grasses and very sparse tree vegetation, so it doesn't play a very big role. In contrast, say here in Sweden where I'm sitting, most of the country is covered in forest, and for a long time they've had a big forest industry. They've also, of course, not had the bushfire threats we do, although, as I just said, that's changing here as the climate warms and dries. So in Australia, getting back there, it's mainly those two big eastern states which are the real hot spots for land clearing.
What kind of learnings from other nations, like you've mentioned with Sweden, can Australia take away in terms of land clearing to perhaps understand why this is so important in terms of tackling climate change?
Well, I think the experience here is that because Sweden has a low population and a very big land area with forest, they do have a lot of industrial production forestry here, as well as conservation of some forests. So there's a more difficult issue for Australia. We have a bigger population. We actually have probably smaller forest area, certainly relative to our population, than Sweden does. And we have some of the most unique forests on the planet. So there is always a tension in Australia between conservation of forests for a whole range of reasons, biodiversity, recreation, and so on, and production forestry. But if you look at Sweden, what they're doing in terms of their production forestry is interesting. They're shifting some of it away from wood products to biofuels. In other words, they're converting the carbon from the forest products into biogas, which then can be used to power vehicles or certainly displace liquid fossil fuel sources. So, and if that is done in a sustainable way, and Sweden has a long history of pretty good forest management, then you can start actually substituting for fossil fuels. And again, there, what you're doing is you're using the active carbon cycle. So as you harvest those forests, turn them into biogas and then burn them, then the forests regrow and pull the carbon back down out of the atmosphere. So over the long time, that's pretty close to carbon neutral.
Farming and agriculture, especially in Australia, is essential to the economy. Why is it so important that we get the balance right when it comes to land clearing and looking to slash pollution levels to tackle climate change?
Well, I think we have a big opportunity here, particularly with soil carbon, because a lot of our soils are poorer compared to a lot of the Northern Hemisphere soils and so on. Good management of soil carbon is really important because it can keep more of that carbon out of the atmosphere, and simultaneously it can improve productivity. Several years ago, Tim Flannery and I were up at Armidale University of New England in northern New South Wales, and we saw two adjacent farms, one where the farmers had managed their soil really, really well, and it was a highly productive farm. A lot of cover on the farm, a lot of animals there. And when you looked at soil profiles, which we did, you could see that it was rich in soil carbon. The one next door was poorly managed. There was a lot of bare soil, a lot of dust, not so many animals there. When you looked at a soil profile there, it looked a lot less healthy. So I think there's a lot to be said both for improving and maintaining productivity of farms, and at the same time, keeping healthy soil with much more carbon stored in the soil. So again, it's one of these win-win situations that with good management, we can help the climate and keep productive landscapes as well.
That's the latest from the Climate Council podcast team. You can access all of our Climate Council reports, fact sheets and podcasts at climatecouncil.org.au. You can also follow us at Climate Council on Twitter and /Climate Council on Facebook. Don't forget, the Climate Council is independent and community funded. We rely on donations to fund our critical research, campaigns and projects. So please help support us with our work and donate via our website today.